So this way here, we could land in Cold Bay, or one of our kids could come pick us up in a car, we can go home.
King Cove residents celebrate a road through the Eisenbeck Wildlife Refuge. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, January 22nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, figuring out the right percentage when using permanent fund earnings.
To make sure that those future generations of Alaskans get the same benefit from that $40 billion, we need to put back some of that gain.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. You can nominate your favorite teacher at bpteachers.com. The deadline is February 1st.
Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station.
Alaska's congressional delegation ticked another item off its decades-old to-do list today. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke signed a land swap agreement to allow a road in the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge for King Cove. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports on a turning point in the dispute over a 12-mile stretch of federal wilderness.
King Cove Corporation's Della Trumbull has been fighting for the road for more than 35 years. Now, she's clutching a blue portfolio holding the land trade agreement.
I've always maintained I'm not going to believe it until I actually the papers are signed, so they're signed.
Conservation groups are dismayed. Some are threatening legal challenges. Audubon says the Eisenbeck is one of the most important bird habitats in the world, critical to migrating waterfowl. Audubon Alaska's Susan Cullany says, among other things, they're concerned about government transparency. She says the Obama administration had an extensive public process when it considered the road.
But this time it's really very limited in its public input.
Proponents say the road will save lives by allowing people from King Cove access to the all-weather airport in Cold Bay.
Okay, everybody, calm down out there.
At a press conference after the signing, Senator Lisa Murkowski displayed two unfancy souvenirs of her fight for the road. One was a legal pad with a note Murkowski had written to herself 4 years ago after then-Interior Secretary Sally Jewell killed a previous King Cove Road deal. Murkowski says her staff conveyed a message to her that she found galling.
Get over it. I wrote it down in this binder that I carry with me everywhere I go. And I put it on the front, the first page, and it said, quote, I need to move past the Eisenbeck thing and get over it.
Murkowski saw it as Washington's callousness toward the safety of King Cove residents. She kept the note on the top sheet of her pad for 4 years.
I'm officially ripping it out. It was getting close to getting ripped out. It's ripped out, and it's gone now. It's gone now.
Murkowski also brought the October 16 front page of the Washington Post, featuring a story about the road and a note scrawled in black marker.
And the scribble on the top says, Lisa, we will get it done. Best, Donald Trump. So, Mr. President, thank you for helping us get it done.
Trump wasn't at the press conference, but King Cove Mayor Henry Mack was. He says everyone in his town has had a loved one suffer a frightening medevac or taken flights from King Cove in fierce winds.
Most of the time it's 25 to 40 in the planes fly because we need to get here there for business, to medical. It's terrifying for even seasoned fishermen, seasoned elders. We just don't like to do it. And it's stressful. It really is.
Max says once the road is built, King Cove residents who travel won't have to wait out bad weather to get home, paying for expensive hotel rooms in Anchorage and wondering how long it will take.
So this way here, we could land in Cold Bay, or one of our kids could come pick us up in a car, we can go home.
The land swap calls for an even exchange between the refuge and the village corporation. Nearly even. Secretary Zinke says the government will gain 1 acre. In years past, King Cove and the state offered the Interior Department 50,000 acres or more in exchange for the road corridor. The federal government would have received some 300 acres for every 1 acre of refuge land. Zinke says he wasn't interested in driving that sort of bargain.
It was unfair, quite frankly.
Governor Bill Walker says those lopsided offers were a sign of how desperate Alaskans were for the road.
And I was glad that didn't go through, because that set a terrible precedent that you know, federal land was worth more than Alaska land.
Della Trumbull says the next step is to conduct land appraisals. Walker says the state might build the road using federal transportation dollars. He expects legal challenges, so he says it's not clear when road construction can begin. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Alaska Permanent Fund has a nearly 50% chance of losing value in the next decade if it's used to pay for state government, as lawmakers have proposed. That's according to a study presented to the House Finance Committee today by Angela Rodell. She's the chief executive officer of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation.
The probability of achieving 6.3%, making all of our distributions, including inflation, is, if you're a glass half full, 52% probability that we will do that. If you're a glass half empty, you have a 48% chance of falling short.
The 6.3% that Rodell mentioned is the annual gains the fund would need to make to cover the state's costs if the legislature adopts Senate Bill 26. A conference committee is considering the bill. Rodell was talking about a study by Connecticut-based investment company Bridgewater. She said the state would lower the risk of losing money if it spent less from the fund. For example, Senate Bill 26 would draw slightly less than 5% of the fund's value from fund earnings every year. But Rodell said drawing less than 4.5% would be safer.
I think this would be intuitive because you're taking less, so you need to earn less to keep those minimum balances going forward.
Rodell also says it's important to the fund's board of trustees that the state government transfer money to the $40 billion principal of the fund that is protected by the state constitution. Without this, the protected value will shrink due to inflation.
To make sure that those future generations of Alaskans get the same benefit that current generations get from that $40 billion, we need to put back some of that gain.
There hasn't been any transfers from fund earnings to cover inflation to the fund's principal in each of the last 3 years. Governor Bill Walker has proposed transferring nearly $1 billion as part of next year's budget. The overall amount of the fund is $64 billion. Of that, $15 billion is in the fund's earning reserve account. An additional $9 billion in earnings are considered part of the principal, but don't have constitutional protections. The government shutdown was poised to have a big effect on the armed services in Alaska and around the globe. Most of those consequences were avoided, at least for the time being, now that congressional leaders have reached a deal. But over the weekend, the Alaska National Guard was forced to cancel most of its scheduled drill exercises, affecting about 4,000 people in Alaska. Across the country, about 90,000 guardsmen were in the same position as a result of the brief shutdown. A public meeting on a Trump administration proposal to open up more of Alaska's waters to oil drilling is being rescheduled due to the government shutdown. The meeting was originally set to take place tomorrow in Anchorage. The Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management hasn't yet settled on a new date. The Department of Interior is aiming to reverse Obama-era offshore drilling policy, which largely blocked oil development in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas. Interior's draft proposal would allow oil lease sales in the Arctic and also off all Alaska's other coasts, except for the North Aleutian Basin by Bristol Bay. Governor Bill Walker advocated for Arctic waters to be included in the federal offshore drilling plan, but Walker says he's asking Interior to expand its outreach effort in Alaska by holding more than one public meeting.
We also are asking that the hearings be held, not just one in Anchorage, but in the particular areas where the activity would take place.
Walker was speaking in Washington, D.C., where he was attending the ceremony for the King Cove Road deal. Some groups, like communities across the Bering Strait region, strongly oppose drilling in areas the Trump administration is proposing to open up. Walker didn't respond directly to a question about whether he will ask Interior to remove some areas included in the proposal. Instead, the governor said he will listen closely to communities that could be affected. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Pete Kaiser reflects on his record fourth consecutive Kuskokwim 300 win.
Just mentally taxing, physical, mentally, everything. Tough, tough race.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds, narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
The U.S. Supreme Court decided today to keep the bearded seal as threatened under the Endangered Species Act, rejecting an oil and gas industry challenge to the animal's protection status. The marine mammal was listed in 2012 due to melting sea ice, but the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, or AOGA, and the American Petroleum Institute thought the listing was premature. Joshua Kindred, an environmental counselor at AOGA, said he was disappointed in the Supreme Court's decision. He says the National Marine Fisheries Service didn't provide enough evidence to warrant a listing.
They didn't really ever show from a scientific point of view why the seasonal sea ice was so critical to their long-term health of the species.
Kindred says there also wasn't sufficient guidance for a plan moving forward. He says excessive critical habitat designations can slow oil and gas development. The Center for Biological Diversity has fought to keep the bearded seal's protection status. Kristen Monsell, a senior attorney at the organization, says the Supreme Court's decision is a step in the right direction, but says wildlife in the Arctic is still at risk. Just 2 weeks ago, the Trump administration opened up the possibility for offshore drilling.
I think this decision not only reinforces the reasons why that proposed plan is just an absolutely terrible idea, but also why it shouldn't move forward.
Bearded seals use Arctic sea ice as a platform for feeding and pupping, and scientists say that habitat is diminishing at an unprecedented rate. Six former Raven, Alaska employees are charged with stealing hundreds of computers sent by mail to village schools. Federal authorities allege the men took the computers while employed as ramp agents for the air carrier in Anchorage. As Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove reports, the theft allegedly took place over a two-year period.
It was from March of 2015 to April of 2017 that the Apple computers went missing. It wasn't until the recent arrests that the rural school districts who'd bought them had an answer. They'd been the victims of mail theft. Bobby Bolin is superintendent of Bering Strait School District, headquartered in Unalakleet.
We already have long delays getting mail, and any additional undue delays is even more frustrating.
Bering Strait Schools and the Lower Yukon School District were both named as victims in the indictment. They would order the computers and have them shipped to Alaska. Raven was contracted to pick up mail at the U.S. Postal Service's distribution center in Anchorage and transfer it to planes headed to Alaska villages. Assistant U.S. Attorney Ani Stewart says, according to the indictment, the men took the stolen mail to their personal vehicles.
The Raven, Alaska employees utilized that company truck to, instead of taking the mail directly to the airplanes, to drive it to the employee parking lot and offload some of the items of value, including the Apple computers.
The indictment says they later worked with the others to sell the stolen goods. According to another school district official, the missing computers were reported to Apple and the schools were not billed for them. Prosecutors with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Anchorage say the men stole 343 computers. In one instance, they also allegedly took hundreds of cartons of cigarettes and cans of chewing tobacco. The total value of the stolen mail was about $489,000. The computers were supposed to be headed to the communities of St. Mary's, Mountain Village, Stebbins, Unalakleet, Amonic, Kotlik, Alakanuk, Aniak, Grayling, Kalskag, and Koyuk, among others. Bolin, the Bering Strait superintendent, says the thefts meant students didn't have the computers they needed for assignments.
Today's education relies on technology, and it's a vital part of our curriculum. Our teachers will do what needs to be done, but it's still frustrating to wait months and have to keep reordering things.
It is unclear if Raven itself will suffer any consequences to its contract with the Postal Service. The air carrier declined a request for comment and did not answer questions, including how the theft went on for 2 years and whether the company had made any changes to prevent future thefts. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
Pete Kaiser won his fourth consecutive Kuskokwim 300 title on Sunday morning, arriving in Bethel shortly after 9 a.m. With the victory, Kaiser accomplished what no other musher has done in 39 years, win 4 victories in a row. Kaiser outlasted 17 competitors on a tough new trail due to unprecedented warm weather and open holes on the Kuskokwim River. Race organizers scrapped the traditional route and devised a plan for mushers to run 2 laps on an overland trail to Bogus Creek and back. Teams faced rough ice over winding tundra trails, frozen creeks, and open lakes. At the finish line, Kaiser said both he and his dog struggled to get traction on the ice.
When it's icy like that, the dogs just have to focus so much more on each step, and the musher also trying to keep the sled from hitting a bump sideways and flipping over or something like that. So just mentally taxing, different than if you're just going down a normal snow-covered trail where they can kind of zone out and just move along at an easy clip. Yeah, overall, physical, mentally, everything, tough race.
Your Liseth Olsom arrived in second place, while 9-time champion Jeff King arrived in third place. Kaiser spent the training season in the area, the first time since 2012 that he hasn't traveled outside of the region to find good snow. That means before the race, he didn't have as many miles as some of his competitors, but his veteran team was prepared.
We live out here and train out here, too, so we're a little more comfortable with it than most, probably. But it still didn't make it comfortable. It was extremely tough, probably one of the toughest, if not toughest, races I've ever done.
Following the Friday night start, the race looped up to Bogus Creek and back on the same trail. After a brutal 140 miles, teams were back in Bethel, but were only halfway through the race. After a few short hours of rest, they turned around to do it again. That prospect proved to be impossible for several elite teams. Over the span of Saturday afternoon, 4 teams scratched. Brent Sass, Aaron Burmeister, Jesse Holmes, and Sim Smith all pulled out in or near the Bethel checkpoint. Yor Olsom's second place finish is the best in his career, improving upon third place in 2016. At the finish, he said he couldn't train for the Kuskokwim conditions from his Willow kennel.
And they know how to handle all sorts of different conditions, but you never know how they're gonna do until you're doing it.
While Jeff King has won 3 consecutive races on 2 occasions, Kaiser's 4 straight victories earns him a spot in the history books. Kaiser wins $25,000 from the $150,000 purse. From Anchorage to Unalaska and Kodiak to Cordova, Alaskans took to the streets over the weekend for the 2nd annual Women's March. This year's theme was Power to the Poles. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell has this roundup.
On a clear, cold day in downtown Anchorage, civil rights activist Shirley Mae Springer Staton belted into the microphone in front of her.
Fighting for women's rights, now I heard myself.
At first, the crowd of hundreds was hesitant to sing along.
It's not that cold that you can't sing. So your part is simply turn me around. Can you say that back to me?
Turn me around.
That was a good start.
Events like this were held across the state. In Nome, people in fur-lined parkas marched down Front Street, including Nikki Brom.
I think it's been a hard year for a lot of folks. Some of the events have been dismaying, but there's hope.
That idea of hope and positivity, it was echoed by Nome resident Marty Rood.
My philosophy is that there's more good people than bad people, and so people need to examine their heart and vote their conscience, and let's turn this around.
Snow fell on the 140 people who chanted through the streets of Kodiak. Robin Corcoran carried the same sign she brought to last year's march. It read, Make America Kind Again.
I think that a lot of people who maybe thought that Donald Trump meant a change are seeing that it was a change for the worse. So if we vote, hopefully we can make a change.
Marchers in Unalaska went a step beyond that, with volunteers like Tammy Pound helping people register to vote.
I'm hoping that a lot more women run for office, and because I think that's how we're going to get things done.
Before the 2016 election, 1,000 people had contacted Emily's list about running for office. The Political Action Committee aims to get more pro-choice Democratic women elected. Since the election, that number has grown to 26,000 women.
Last summer, I decided to run for Homer City Council.
Rachel Lord was one of those women, inspired by the 2016 election.
I realized that if I wasn't willing to sit at the table, others would be. And I believe in local government. I believe in the process. I believe in our democracy.
The biggest crowd to march in Alaska was in Juneau, where close to 1,000 people gathered outside the state's capital. Here's the march's MC, Sarah Hannon.
We had more people than we thought might show up with such little advance notice, and so many young people. To women of the retirement age, it is good to see the baton being passed and the willingness to take up the fight.
There was a similar shout-out at the march in Sitka, which drew about 300 people to the streets. Organizer Kathy Inglenera thanked everyone for coming out.
Especially the youth, the teenagers, it's really important for you guys to get involved.
Back in Anchorage, the chorus of voices kicking off the march grew louder. There was a buzz in the air, like the women in the audience knew their voices were finally being heard. With help from Gabe Colombo in Nome, Mitch Borden in Kodiak, Zoe Sobel in Unalaska, Renee Gross in Homer, Adeline Baxter in Juneau, and Emily Kwong in Sitka, I'm Emily Russell in Anchorage.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan for students attending most college or training programs in or outside of Alaska, and it offers interest rates lower than the Federal Plus. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
Commercial salmon fishermen are now banned from using spotter planes in southeast waters. That's following a 4-3 vote by the Board of Fisheries meeting in Sitka on Friday. Board member Al Kane said the vote was a difficult decision, but it boiled down to an issue of fairness.
We heard one fisherman talk about leveling the playing field, so to speak, so that the newer or beginning fishermen can compete. And some of those descriptions, I think, were very compelling for me.
Chairman John Jensen didn't think aircraft made much difference in the age of smartphones. Coincidentally, a phone went off in the audience, generating some chuckles from them.
The thing that's changed this fishery the most in the last 25 years is the advent of cell phones and track phones. It nothing to do with pilots. It's guys on the back deck taking pictures, Facebooking it, YouTubes, and posting it, and there's no secrets anymore.
Spotter planes are already banned in other parts of the state, including Prince William Sound. The measure doesn't affect other fish species, such as herring, where spotter planes are common. After a marathon 13 days, Board of Fish will wrap up its finfish meeting tomorrow. A delegation from Angoon is protesting the city and borough of Juneau's attempt at annexing parts of Admiralty Island. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports that the initiative is scheduled for a public hearing and possible vote this evening.
Snow blanketed a group of singers, two adults and three children, holding signs and singing in Tlingit at the base of the Douglas Bridge. The Juneau Assembly is looking to expand in four areas. Three would enlarge its footprint on Admiralty Island. 35-year-old Matthew Carlson is originally from Angoon. He says Angoon elders worked hard to get the federal government to create Admiralty Island National Monument in 1978.
Since then, it was put on the back burner by the Bureau of Juneau. And now that it's 2018, it seems that now that it's in the front burner.
The city of Angoon passed a resolution last spring opposing Juneau's annexation plan. And Angoon's mayor will address the Juneau Assembly directly this evening.
These are actual leaders of Angoon that, on their own accord made it here to show up at the city council meeting starting at 7 o'clock. And they will be having a presence there.
In the meantime, Carlson and his friends are taking to social media to try to get the word out.
We've reached out through Facebook, No Annex for Admiralty, and it spread the word across. It's probably still under 100 likes and shares, but they, throughout time, it's gonna multiply.
Juneau Assembly action wouldn't make this a done deal. Annexation petitions are reviewed by the state's local boundary commission, and its ruling would still need to go before the Alaska legislature. Some Angoon residents are wary of Juneau annexing a tract just south of Hecla's Greens Creek mine. This tract was added to the annexation plan by the Juneau Assembly at a committee meeting earlier this month.
I'm sure the mining is hoping to get some expansion so that they can mine farther and lay more tailing out.
Juneau resident Joe Zuboff is originally from Angoon. He says people in his hometown worry that the annexation could simplify Hecla's expansion. That's something many in Angoon don't want.
Well, the delegation in town is just now banding together to hopefully put a stop to annexing any more land. You know, Admiralty Island is a national monument. We don't need to throw more tailings all over the place.
The predominantly silver-producing mine is within Admiralty Island National Monument, but outside the monument's designated wilderness area, which restricts development. Any new lands annexed by Juneau would be in this wilderness.
We do not have any ability to develop on the surface in that area.
Mike Satry manages government and community relations for Greens Creek Mine, so no surface mining in wilderness areas. But what about under wilderness areas?
We potentially could follow our existing extralateral rights from our patented claims if they happen to trend that way.
The other tracts in the annexation plan are largely uninhabited. They're used by guides for bear viewing and hunting and fishing trips. The tract around Funter Bay is also controversial. It has more than a dozen seasonal cabins whose landowners have overwhelmingly objected to being added to the tax rolls, many of whom are also expected at the Juneau Assembly meeting tonight at 7 p.m. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman, Elizabeth Jenkins, and Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes, Casey Grove, and Emily Russell in Anchorage, Ben Matheson in Bethel, and Emily Kwong in Sitka. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting. If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station.
The Federal Subsistence Board is accepting applications through February 2nd to fill seats on the 10 Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Councils meet at least twice a year and provide critical advice to the board on subsistence management issues. Individuals may apply or nominate someone for membership. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message is sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.